Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three Pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome back to the Big Three. My name is Mark Rader. I'm the senior pastor here at Guymere Baptist Church. And for the next half hour or so, your host as we unpack these three big questions. On Sunday, we finished our series on Sabbath, Learning to Rest with Jesus, a series that we have been in which we have been exploring the teaching of Scripture on Sabbath, but staying quite a ways away from kind of concrete application for a couple of reasons, one of which is I think we need to kind of pause and understand, as I said on Sunday, to understand the why of Sabbath before we jump into the how. So on Sunday, we looked at what Jesus has to say about himself as the Lord of the Sabbath, and in particular, that he says that the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. And the Son of Man, an image taken from Daniel chapter 7, fills the Lord of the Sabbath with some more meaning. Because the Son of Man in Daniel 7 is the agent of the Ancient of Days. Jesus is the agent of God, bringing about God's plans and purposes. So when he says that he's the Lord of the Sabbath, he is not only saying that he has the authority to determine what is and is not kosher on a Sabbath, but he also has the Sabbath at the intention of the Sabbath kind of in the forefront of his mind, that he is very, very keen as the agent of the Father to do the Father's will in relationship to the Sabbath. The implication of that for us is that Jesus held the why in front of him the whole time and was willing, shall we say, to be a bit flexible, it seems, on the how, or at least to do to practice the Sabbath in ways that were challenging to the religious leaders, particularly in relationship to healing. But the why of the Sabbath to bring freedom and restoration and wholeness and rest and all of those sorts of things dominated the way Jesus engaged with the Sabbath. And I think the same is true for us. We need to understand the why. It's been a really challenging series for me personally. If this is the first time you've joined us, I'd encourage you to jump back, not necessarily through the Big Three, although you might want to do that as well after you go through the sermons. But it's been a really challenging series, thinking through what it means to keep Sabbath and how important that is. The questions this week that were raised by the congregation were great. There was, I don't know, seven or eight of them, which was fantastic. I always love when there's multiple options. But what I also found really intriguing is that there were some themes that came up. So there were two or three questions that basically asked something along the lines of, are we overcomplicating Sabbath? And so one of our questions relates to that. There were a couple of questions that essentially asked, is this for just us independently, or is it for us as a community? And if so, what does that mean? Which I thought, again, was a really great question that's kind of bubbling away in lots of people's minds, I think. You know, what does it mean for a church to keep the Sabbath, a church community to keep the Sabbath? I'll ask one of the questions that kind of framed that up, but there were a couple of questions that asked those themes. And then the last question that I want to address today is actually a little bit about work asking what the Sabbath might have to say about work in particular. So I'm really looking forward to digging into these hopefully continuing the conversation, not just this week, but said on Sunday, hopefully into the coming months as we explore what it might look like for us to begin to think about and to practice the Sabbath together. But let's jump into the first question. So as I said, the third question I mentioned is actually the first question I want to address, and that is this: do you think Sabbath has anything in particular to say about work? And this question kind of, jumped off the page, but it was on my phone, but it kind of jumped out at me a little bit, because earlier this year, we did a series on vocation. and spent 4 weeks thinking about what it means for us to integrate and to think about our work and our faith being integrated. And we went back to Genesis, you know, to the creation accounts where work is built into the created order. It's not part of the curse that humanity have to work. It's not like Adam and Eve were at kind of some sort of, you know, Club Med where they just kind of, you know, went from the pool to the beach to the pool. There was a sense that they were able to work and that their work itself was honoring to God's purposes. Working in the garden, keeping the garden, expanding the garden, pruning the trees. This was all part of God's work. And so we spent a lot of time thinking about what it looks like for us to be people who recognize that whatever our vocation might be, whether it be paid or unpaid, full-time or part-time, in our families, in our homes, or in our workplaces, as students and as retirees, what does it look like for us to see and sense where God is in our work? And one of the things that we pointed out again and again is that to see ourselves as Christians at work does not mean that we have to be thinking necessarily evangelistically. I think sometimes we reduce our faith integration at work to conversations I have with my colleagues or my neighbors or whatever it might be about faith. But it's actually seeing that the work itself is valuable. And I reckon that that's the jumping off point for how I would answer this question then. About what does Sabbath have to say about work? Because I reckon that the existence of the Sabbath, right, the seventh day, actually in some very significant ways honors work, or perhaps more appropriately to say that it puts work in its proper context. That might be the best way to put it. So there's something quite powerful, isn't there, to say that God himself worked for 6 days and we also work. Like there's something about our work, something about our vocation, the things that we do and strive and strain to do with intent and purpose that is in very real ways part of the reflection of God's character, right? It's part of God's image. So there's something about the Sabbath then, that opportunity to rest as God did, that reflects who we are as image bearers. But it also just kind of says to us that, you know, work is important, but it's not everything. Like it's not everything. And I think that part is a really powerful boundary marker. To say that, you know, the world will spin on without me working. Things will still happen. Like the world's not going to end if I stop working for 1 day out of seven. There's something really powerful about what it says about work then. Yes, work is a reflection of God's character and his image. It's something that it's been built into us. We've been made for vocation in lots of ways, but we've also been made for rest. And I think that just places work in its proper context. Really important, really significant, really fulfilling, but not everything that there is. I think that it's also quite striking that, you know, as we looked at in this Sabbath series in the first week, that, you know, when God rested on the seventh day, all of creation, shall we say, got to rest on the seventh day. So humanity, created late in the afternoon on day six, their first day of history was not actually working. It was not immediately being kind of thrown into the garden saying, you know, fix this place up and start planning for the future, right? Get at it. But it started with grace. And so there's something quite profound as well about recognizing that starting from a place of rest shapes the way we enter into work. So we don't work to earn rest. We rest in order to work, which is probably a little bit of an oversimplification, but I think there's something quite profound about that order, about saying that we start with rest. We start from a position of grace, right? Which is perhaps better than saying we start from a place of rest, because a place of grace says, I did nothing to deserve this rest. But it has been given to me by God, and I have done nothing to earn it, and I've been given this blessing. And now I'm about to enter into my work, which has also been given to me by God. But it suggests that I don't have to earn my way with God through my work. I am set free to work to the fullest of my ability because I start from a place of grace. So I think that's also quite profound. I think that's a really important kind of component of it as well. And in the reading that I've done on Sabbath, one of the consistent features is that the practice of a Sabbath day begins to spill into the rest of the week. So it shapes the way we work, right? We may need to do a little extra, we may need to work a little bit harder on the 6 days in order that we might have the rest on the seventh. So there's a focus to our work to prepare us for that seventh day, that we are working with a little bit more intentionality instead of just saying, well, I'm going to be working every single day, like on my day, all my days are full, so I'll just kind of find time somewhere in the 7 days to do that thing. We're actually saying we're stopping. And so there's an intentionality about our work, which I think also highlights its purpose in our lives. So I think that by delineating a day of rest, there's something profound about the character, the tone, and the value that work has for us. And so I think, you know, it was a great question for me to think through a little bit, particularly, as I said, because of that series we did earlier this year, and recognizing that our work and Sabbath are meant to go together. Like that's the week, right? That's the week. God worked for 6 days and then rested on the seventh, and we are to do the same. And so there's something, I don't know, really powerful about that, I think. So hope that gets you thinking a bit more about work and Sabbath and how our rest shapes and influences our work, and it feels intuitively right to me. Right, it feels like intuitively that resting would have an enormous impact on the way in which we approach our work. So I think that's where I'm landing at this point in time, and would like to think that one of the impacts for us as a community of faith would be that it would change the way we experience and understand our work, and that might be one of the more powerful witnesses to our society. It's not just that we've managed to find a way to rest, but that we've actually changed our attitudes towards even the work that we do. However, let's turn to a couple more Sabbath-centric questions as we continue the Big Three. So the second question I want to deal with is, as I said at the outset, there were a couple of questions that kind of all dealt with the same kinds of themes. And so I picked one over the other to actually use as the question, but there were a couple that dealt with this same idea, and that is about overcomplicating the Sabbath. So the question that was submitted that I chose is this: when we think of what Sabbath is in today's context, we seem to get into details that could easily become legalism. Are we overcomplicating the Sabbath? Which is a great question. And, you know, again, the conversations that I've been having with people in the congregation and with colleagues about Sabbath does get it gets into the detail pretty quickly, because we start asking the questions about, well, like, how do we do this? And what's work and what's not work and all of those sorts of things. And so the question about are we overcomplicating it is a pretty important one. And there's a few reflections that I have around that. So I think, first of all, again, in the reading that I've done on Sabbath, and this resonates with me in a pretty profound way, they routinely talk about how Sabbath keeping has to be intentional. One author, I think, said it several times in their book, but it was like, no one accidentally keeps the Sabbath, right? You don't just kind of, without any forethought, without any thinking about it, without kind of any planning, you don't just kind of accidentally go, oh, look, about the end of the day, I had a wonderful Sabbath day. That was nice, a surprise. It requires planning and intentionality. And I think because it requires intentionality, it kind of leans towards overcomplication, right? In the sense that we've got to be thoughtful about it. We've got to be considering what sorts of things we could do, some of the things that we might not do to fill a day with rest, or even to find a day or half a day or a couple of hours to fill with rest, right? We need to be intentional. And so that suggests that there's going to be some element of complication rather than just kind of rolling with it. Secondly, I think it's worth noting that if Sabbath is as important as it appears to be, right? Like one of the themes that I think has come out of these last 5 weeks in terms of the preaching, at least for me, has been that Sabbath is much more important in Scripture than I had perhaps given it credit for. Both in terms of its significance in the created order, the way in which it's talked about in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, the two accounts of the Ten Commandments, the way Jesus describes his entire ministry is based broadly on Sabbath principles, his discussion of himself as the Lord of the Sabbath, and it just kind of goes on and on. There was this real sense that the Sabbath is really important, and if something is really important, then I'm not sure that we want to overthink it, but we do want to overthink it, don't we? I dabble with some cooking, and every so often I've tried some fairly complicated recipes, and because they're the outcome is important to me, right? And I've bought all these special ingredients, and you're preparing this for a special occasion. Like, I pay pretty close attention to the recipe, and I try to do kind of exactly what the recipe has to say. Like, I'm focused on, shall I say, overthinking the recipe to make sure that I get the outcome that I'm after. So if something's really important to us, then we do pay attention to the details. And again, I think if Sabbath is super important, then we probably need to be down the end of overcomplicating it. All right. Now, overcomplication, of course, is a bit of a hard word, right? In the sense that I don't think we want to have a super overly complicated practice of Sabbath, right? But there will be some elements of the intentionality and its importance that lead us to having to do some pretty deep thinking. That's reflected in what little I know about the rabbinical developments, the Jewish rabbis and the way in which they taught around Sabbath and the prohibitions and the way they kind of thought about those Old Testament prohibitions in new contexts and all of those sorts of things. So there is a natural element where it's going to be more complicated than having a day off. I think that's probably the best way to put it. But I think there's one other element that I think is significant, and that is that whenever you learn a new skill, right? Whenever you learn a new skill, it's always complicated, right? Like, I was just talking to my daughter the other day about driving. She was taking someone out to drive. She's on her black P's. No, she's not on her black P's. She's on her blacks now, so she can do that. So she was taking someone out and teaching them to drive manuals. So they're just going to do some work in the parking lot and whatnot. And we just had this little conversation about teaching someone else to do that and how you have to remember all of the steps because they become so intuitive for you. So whenever you learn a new skill, like it nearly always, even if it's not particularly complicated, it feels complicated. Like for those of you who can remember learning to drive, say, a manual, if you've ever driven a manual, like at the beginning, it's just, you got to get your feet moving in the right direction. You've got to make sure that you've got the clutch coming out at the right time and the engine's revving the right time. And like there's so much to think about. But over time, it becomes easier. And I suspect that with the Sabbath, it might be the same. That initially, because it's important, we want to be intentional, there's going to be a certain degree that it's just going to feel complicated. Like it's just going to feel like we're bunny hopping around the neighborhood in terms of our Sabbath practice. But that over time, as it becomes more natural, as we become more familiar, as it becomes a little bit more intuitive, I think that it will settle into it a little bit. And I think that's where we have to be careful of legalism creeping in, right? I don't want to extend the driving metaphor too much, but I think once we become more comfortable with something, it's easy to say, well, this is the way to do it. I've become comfortable with my way, and this is the way, and so everyone should do what I do, and then we get legalistic. But I do think that there's I suppose if I were to answer the question, are we overcomplicating Sabbath? I think the answer is we have to. It's really important, and we want to be intentional about it, and it's a new skill, and so it is going to feel and probably needs to be a little bit more complicated than I suppose we might like. You know, and I think one of the last thing I'll say about this, again, one of the things that comes through in the reading, I wouldn't say it comes out explicitly, although it may in a few places, but essentially, Sabbath observance is a practice. And the implication is that sometimes you get it right and sometimes you get it wrong, right? Sometimes it's great and sometimes it's not. So a number of the authors reflect on the fact that sometimes their Sabbath practices haven't been particularly restful, or they found themselves doing something on the Sabbath that they thought might be restful but actually wasn't, or they get to the end of the day and it hasn't been this brilliant, wonderful oasis of spiritual rest and peace. Like, it's just been a day, and right, but the practice of it's quite important. And I think we do need to be gracious to ourselves. You know, you think about, again, going back to the car illustration, you know, when you're teaching someone, you know, to drive a manual or to drive in general, or teaching anyone a new skill, you try to be really encouraging to them, don't you? You know, early on, it's like, hey, it's okay, don't worry, don't get down on yourself. It's okay, try again, start the car up again, right? You know, try that thing again. Just do it. You're doing fine, right? If they're still driving like that in 10 years, it'd be a problem, but you know, they're learning and off you go. So I think we need to be gracious to ourselves even in the midst of it, particularly with something like the Sabbath, which I think by definition probably does need to be a little bit complicated. I'm not sure if that's encouraging or discouraging, but I think it is important to recognize that we are probably dealing with something that is going to feel pretty complicated if nothing else. Which brings us to our last question, which is really focused on what this looks like for us as a church. And again, there were a couple of questions that asked the same kinds of things wrapped around, you know, independent or individual or corporate expressions of Sabbath. And the question that I chose as kind of the launch pad was this: looking at examples from the Bible, is Sabbath mainly observed independently or with others? If mainly with others, what does that look like for GBC as a church? And I think you can see why I chose that question. I think what it looks like for us as a church is a pretty important next step for us. So essentially, you know, in terms of answering the question, from a biblical perspective, Sabbath was mainly done with others. I mean, in the sense that the whole society stopped. I've had a couple of people actually reflect to me that one individual was in Israel for a period of time, a holiday, but they were there for a couple of weeks or whatever, and the place just shut down on Friday nights. You know, there were notifications to let people know what was going on, and the whole place shut down. And so while individuals and families were celebrating the Sabbath or keeping the Sabbath, the fact that they were all doing it together, right, brought a real sense of camaraderie, I suppose, in the midst of it. I mean, the example we looked at on Sunday with Jesus, you know, he's walking with his disciples and some religious leaders and possibly other people as well through the grain fields. They may have been walking to or from synagogue. They may have just been out in God's creation. We're not really told the why for it. But it's striking that they're all doing it together. So you can imagine that there would have been conversation, you know, the kind of conversation that you have when you're walking to and from synagogue, right? You know, I mean, having someone around for lunch today, or what did you prepare yesterday? Or, you know, just chit chat, that there would have been something that they were doing together. You know, I think sharing meals, doing synagogue, or attending synagogue, I think those sorts of things together would be quite powerful for people. So I think that there's a strong corporate element, right? God wants his people to stop. When it comes to what that looks like for the community of faith here at GBC, I think it gets, to go back to the last question, a little bit more complicated. It's more difficult, I think, in our 24/7 world to find a time when we can all stop. Again, one of the books I read addressed this question, should we have one day or can it be any day? And I think the author's reflection was ideally, an ideal world, we'd all celebrate the Sabbath on the same day. Right? We could all encourage each other on that same day. We could all kind of participate together all that kind of stuff. But the reality is, from their perspective, the most important part was the discipline of the day. One day in seven where we're choosing to rest. So I think for for us as a community of faith, and part of the answer to this, of course, will be done by that small working group that I'm still looking for people to be involved in. So if you're keen, let me know. What does it look like for us as a community of faith? I suspect that there may be a bit of an emphasis, for instance, on Sundays. It's as close to a day that we can probably find and create time to rest as during the week. You know, for most families, people are working Monday through Friday. The kids are going to school Monday through Friday. Saturdays have a lot of stuff on. So I suspect that Sunday might become one of those primary days where we try to identify some practices and I think connect people up to practice the Sabbath together. But I also suspect that there'll be people for whom Saturday works better. I remember when our kids got to a certain age, suddenly, their sport commitments shifted from Saturday to Sunday. Saturday becomes a better day. And now that our kids are a little bit older and they've, two of them are out of the house and whatnot, it may be that a midweek day is better for me or for Nicole and I to find time to rest because that just works better. I tend to work on Sundays. So, and even though I really enjoy that, is that, all those questions. And I suspect that, for us as a community of faith, if we could find people who were, trying to observe the Sabbath on a Wednesday because their part-time work and the stage of their kids and whatever it was meant that worked for them, to just kind of connect people up a little bit, so that you knew that there were other families who were doing the midweek thing or other individuals who were doing the midweek thing. So you could share notes and, kind of keep each other a little bit accountable to kind of go, how'd you go last week? And, what are you planning for this week? What worked? What didn't work? Can I pray for you in that? Those sorts of things. So I do think that there's something pretty powerful, I think, about being able to do this together. Anytime we do something together, there's strength in it, right? It's one of the reasons why we have, walking groups and those groups of people, you might be part of them, those fitness groups that gather together in the mornings and go running together or whatever they do. Like there's something about doing it with other people that's really encouraging and does, kind of keep us accountable. There's a group too that we don't want to let down and all of that. So I think that there's some space for us to be considering kind of independent and family and individual expressions of Sabbath. As I mentioned on Sunday, there was that distinction between, whether driving on a Sabbath day would be permissible. And as one author pointed out, that if you drive an hour to work and an hour home every day during the week, your Sabbath, if it's say on a Saturday or a Sunday, probably shouldn't include driving. But if you work from home and you never get out of the house, the Sabbath might include driving because it's not work for you. It's something that's different. So I think we need to have individual expressions, but being able to share some of those experiences with others, to find people and to be linked up with people who are trying to observe the Sabbath at the same time could actually be a really valuable thing for us to encourage us to be thinking that through. I think, we'd want to probably also be considering how we get, say young families, I mentioned them a few weeks ago. If you've got really, really little kids, like keeping a whole Sabbath day, that's a lot of work, and it's supposed to be a day of rest. So how do you go about doing that? I think we'd want to connect families with small children together to kind of go, how are you guys doing this? Even if you're not doing it on the same day. So I think some of those things give Sabbath a kind of a corporate edge. And I think that goes back not only to the societal implications of keeping Sabbath, right? That the people of Israel were to do that, but also that there are those corporate components of Sabbath, right? Of freedom and release and healing and restoration and all of those sorts of things that kind of play into our practices of Sabbath as well. So again, thank you for those of you who asked those questions. Really struck by the common themes in some of those questions, and hope that my reflections have been helpful for that. And not just today, but over the last 5 weeks. Thank you for those of you who've been kind of listening along and continuing this conversation. We did give people an opportunity to answer a 9-question survey. You can still find it on our link tree if you want to look that up. But and some of the results so far, there's only kind of about a dozen people who have responded. But one of the things that was quite striking, I asked, you know, how open are you now to adopting some spiritual practice, some Sabbath practices? And it's pretty overwhelming on a small sample size that people are pretty keen to start thinking about what this might look like to actually do in their lives. So I found that really encouraging. Hope that you feel that encouraged as well to start thinking more seriously about this. And love, you know, in particular, if you're part of the community of faith here, to be praying for us as we figure out what the next steps might be. And if you are part of another community of faith and you've been listening in, hope this has been a real blessing for you, and that stimulates some of your own thinking around this as well. We return to our series in Chronicles this coming Sunday. So looking forward to getting back to that series while we wait. Looking at what it looks like for us to wait for God's promises to be fulfilled, and looking at some of the kings in particular over the next few weeks, which I think will be fantastic. But until next week then, God bless, and look forward to answering 3 big questions again next week.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big 3 podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are The Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Guymere Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.